Somalia is not the monster that people make it out to seem. It's not the lawless nation that is often depicted in the media. It is not, you know, a war-torn country. It was at one point. It is not now. In 2021, I traveled to Mogadishu.
Welcome back to the third episode of Next Stop Africa. I am your gracious host, Amy Kikoma. I'm Congolese. I'm here with my two co-hosts, Benny. She's from Rwanda. Luden, you guys know him, Dominican, Puerto Rican. And we're here with a very special guest from Somalia, Abdul Karim. Can you just pronounce it? Because I know I didn't do it justice.
Abdul Karim.
There we go. You see the emphasis in that. Yeah. But, you know, make sure everybody checked out episode 2. Make sure you left some comments. Make sure you gave the 5 stars and all that good stuff. I guess real quick, Happy New Year to everybody. Hope everybody's been well. Hope the new year has already been treating everybody well. But yeah, I keeping up with the little icebreaker. We usually try to do a lot of people have been responding well to it. I try to test everybody's knowledge on Africa just to kind of see how much do you actually know about Africa? I'm trying to think of something off the top of my head. Okay, something easy. What's the longest river in Africa? Easy, easy. Something easy.
Listen, I didn't do so great.
This then
global history.
this is.
You asked me about math and science. I can answer. You asked me about geography based stuff. I can't give you an answer.
Do you want us to type it in or say it out loud?
No, dive it in. But yeah, you guys should have sent it to me, not everybody.
You didn't specify on that.
You didn't specify.
It's cool. Now go ahead. Let me see. I'm waiting for Luden. Luden, I hope you're not.
Me? I don't want to embarrass myself.
You look very concentrated. Yeah, I mean, but the answer to the river question is the Nile River. So everybody got it right. Everybody cheated, but that's okay.
I didn't cheat. This one I'm no way from. Middle school.
that's an East Africa one. That's the one the war is over, so it's pretty famous right now.
Yeah, it is very famous. I guess we could dive in a little bit into today's topic, which is kind of like a big crisis right now, famine in Somalia. So typically we try to do like a little background of each country. We talk about history, politics, culture, language, finance, etc. So I don't know, Benny, did you still want to do the history and culture, or should I?
Yeah.
Let's just remember we have
an expert. Yes, please do correct us. This is just a Google search.
So please chime in.
So today we're going to be talking about Somalia. Somalia is an East African country located in Horn of Africa. It's bordered with Ethiopia, Djibouti, Kenya, and also the Indian Ocean. So Amy can take us into the brief history of Somalia.
Colonization of Somalia was kind of like a competition between multiple countries, England, France, Italy, Ethiopia, and Egypt. Egypt was the first to seize territory in Somalia in 1875. Then about 5 years later, the British and the French pushed the Egyptians out of Somalia so that the French could take over that territory. Then the rest of Somalia was to be divided between England, Italy, and Ethiopia. But Ethiopia was excluded from the Berlin Conference in 1884. So then England and Italy divided the remaining territory. England took the north portion of Somalia, which was called British Somalia. Currently is Somaliland, and Benny would kind of talk a little bit about that a little bit later. And then the Italians took the south portion, which was called Italian Somalia. And then eventually the north and south of the split territories, they united, gained independence the 1st of July 1960. So culture. The main spoken languages are Somali, and then Arabic. I know a couple of people that speak Swahili. So I'm guessing, you know, that's also might be a semi-popular language over there as well. A lot of the meals are kind of meat driven. So goat, beef, lamb, chicken, they'll fry it, grill, broil it. Also, you guys make some really good sambusas. I am a very big fan. And then religion. So when I did the research, the Federal Ministry of Endowments and Religious Affairs, they said 99% of the population are Sunni Muslims. And then the rest of the 1% kind of makes up the other remaining religions. So Christianity, Judaism, you have Hinduism out there, Buddhists, etc. Now, Luden will chime in.
I'm a little nervous now because we have a very strong political figure over here, and I was just like rereading all my notes, and like now I'm like having stage fright, like forgetting everything because I was just talking to Amy before this, and I was like, "Did you know this? And did you know that?" And then now I'm over here like. But in all seriousness, during the lifetime of the podcast and all the different places we'll talk about, Somalia is probably one that has like a lot of political turmoil dating back from a very long time ago. That's something that we'll also get into during this episode. But something to kind of consider during this kind of like political affair is the political division causing, you know, a little bit of the famine that Amy was talking about. According to like the humanitarian website, I can't remember off the top of my head, but there was a website that goes around talking about global freedom in each country around the world and everything like that. And Somalia came out, so out of 100, it scored 7 for, you know, for freedom, for political fairness, all that kind of jazz. So that's kind of like a very gross oversimplification of the situation that goes on. You know, from what I read, it sounds like there's a little bit of a connection between like communication with like the Western UN, and a little bit with correct me if I'm wrong if I say this, the Al-Shabaab? Is that how it's pronounced? Or no?
Al-Shabaab.
Thank you. Cool. Thank you. Al-Shabaab. And so there's kind of a little bit of a very heavy influence from Al-Shabaab. And that's probably a conversation, you know, that we'll probably get more into depth. But a very high level is just, it's kind of an organization that is very centered on a lot of the current political views of what's going on right now, from what I've kind of seen from that kind of research. And so one thing that was pretty interesting that maybe that people from Western side of the world may not know. So like they were talking about like how there were different attacks going on in 2021 and 2020, like during like the longevity of COVID. And so like all the different attacks, all the attack on children, civilians, all the sexual violence that was going on and everything like that. And like the categorization of sexual violence, and I just wanted to like read what they wrote. It's not necessarily like what we think of when it's like a violation of like body autonomy. They kind of classify as an offense against a monastery or sexual honor. So has a very different view on it that some people from the Western side may view it as different. And so all of that is to say, just to kind of give you like a small glimpse of kind of the division that is going on over there. And so keep an open mind about how not every single place has the same political liberty as others.
Yeah. And in addition to like the political instabilities going on, obviously once politics is not strong, also financial situation also goes downhill. So financially, Somalia is struggling. Its economy depends largely on agriculture. And unfortunately, because of the constant wars and the current also famine that Amy can talk about very soon is also like affecting how much of the farming and agricultural resources that could be produced. So financially, Somalia is also like ranked among the poorest countries in Africa.
So before I kind of dive in a little bit in more detail on, you know, on today's topic, Abdul, do you mind kind of just, I guess for our listeners, kind of a little bit what we were talking about earlier, just tell us a little bit about yourself.
So yeah, like we mentioned earlier, my name is Abdikarin Abukar Aden. I am a Somali raised here in the United States. Because of a civil war that broke out in 91, my family was forced to go to neighboring Kenya because of complications that existed at the time. And when I was 5, I came to the United States. So I grew up Somali, I grew up Kenyan, I grew up American, learned religious sciences in Arabic, and there was a lot of identity question marks that needed to be resolved. And by the age of 12, I was already involved in Somali politics. I was writing about Somali politics. I was passionate about Somali history. And because of a lot of familial influence, a religious phase took over, which I learned a lot from, actually, until I was like 22 years old. And then that's when I decided that I should become involved again in Somali politics and helping Somalis and so on. But I quickly found out that Somalia's problems are inextricably tied to continental Africa. And so I started championing an idea of an entire Africa kind of initiative. And so I started learning about other African struggles in Somalia, in Kenya, in Ethiopia, the Rwandese legend as well, like Paul Kagame and Nyerere, and other, you know, world, you know, heroes and stuff like that who had similar problems like Somalia has. Rwanda has a similar problem. Singapore, Lee Kuan Yew had to deal with a similar problem. And they've all turned out to be legends. And so why can't we do that in Somalia, for example? And then now I feel like that since I finished my education, I mean, education is never really over. I'm continuing my education. But I feel like now that I need to go on the ground and join Somalia. And because Somalia is not the monster that people make it out to seem. It's not the lawless nation that is often depicted in the media. It is not, you know, a war-torn country. It was at one point, it is not now. In 2021, I traveled to Mogadishu. I traveled to the Dar es Salaam, which is several kilometers outside of Mogadishu. I went to Puntland. I went to Somaliland. And in this summer's trip, I'm going to less stable states like Hirshabelle and so on. So I feel passionate that a lot of these problems, such as famine and other stuff, are tied to a lack of governance and nation building and peacekeeping and roadless nation and so on. So I wrote a lot of articles about that and so on. So
I think I speak for everybody when I say what you're doing is definitely commendable. I think that's a lot of people's dreams. I think a lot of young Africans, you know, that grew up in foreign countries, I think we all kind of share the same goal of returning home and helping some type of way. So to actually sit here and to be talking to somebody that's already doing that, that was doing that since they were 12, I think that's mind-blowing. That's amazing. You know, I'm sure you get told this a lot, but just met you today and I'm very proud of you. Like, you know what I mean, bro? I think, you know, it's very empowering. And again, I'm gonna reiterate, you have my support 1,000%. You know, if I was able to vote, I'll be right down there voting for you. You know, anything that you need, you know, for us to help push, you know, the agenda that you have. I know personally, me, I'm on board 100%. And I'm sure Benny and Luden kind of, you know, shared the same sentiment. So thank you for sharing that. I did have a couple of bullets that I wanted to go through a little bit just to kind of give everybody like a little background of what exactly is going on in terms of like the famine. And then we'll kind of hop into the three questions that I had, kind of open up the floor a little bit and talk more. So currently Somalia is kind of facing like the worst drought that they've had in history. When I researched, I found out that Somalia only has like two main rain seasons. And again, I don't know if I'm a butcher the pronunciation, but the Gu season, right? And the other season is, that one I'm not going to be able to do, but Dyer. Oh,
close enough.
What is the correct pronunciations for the two rain seasons?
The Gu, which is the spring, the Dyer, which is fall.
See what I mean? Now you know why I was nervous.
You might, I guess, you know, at least I tried, you know, it's part of history now. Now everybody knows. So I think that's important. kind of getting back into it. So, you know, rain seasons, I guess, have not kind of produced enough rain to kind of help the crops grow. So there are many like aid agencies that think that, you know, famine should be declared in the country. But I guess background on kind of declaring famine, it has to be under like extreme conditions. They think that, you know, in order to declare famine, a full third of a region's children have to be severely malnourished. A fifth of the population has to have no access to food. There are two hunger-related deaths per 10,000 people each day. So that was a kind of like, I guess, the requirements in order for, you know, a nation to declare famine. So in the past couple of years, there's only been two famines ever declared. One was in 2017, South Sudan, and then the other one was 2011 in Somalia as well. Surprisingly, something that I found very interesting, I thought I should mention, the U.S. donated $700 million, which was more than the entire world combined. So I don't know if that's true or not. You know, I don't believe too much in, you know, U.S. getting involved in anything. But yeah, so just a little background of what we're going to jump into. So first question, I guess, for everybody, why does it seem like there is no actual interest in helping Somalia in this like crisis right now?
That's easy. Not easy, but like easy in the sense that, like, not to oversimplify it, but it's kind of at the end of the day, what do I get back in return? You know, because a lot of times for the U.S. is for military expansion. And so that the U.S. will always do that. Like, I don't think none of us can deny that. They've always done that throughout history, throughout anywhere they go to. They're like, hey, we'll help you. We just want our military base to be there. And 9 out of 10 times, that's what always happens. And so for some other of these countries, continents or whatever, you know, what's in them for them? You know what I mean? And so they look at it from a very selfish perspective. At least that's how I see it. So that's just my opinion.
I feel like looting is like the biggest factor, and also maybe the political instabilities itself, like, just scares some other countries from getting involved. But when you look at other countries, also it comes on like what type of resources they're gonna be extracting from that country. So I do think maybe Somalia might have some gold, but like, I don't know other mineral resources that is there that can be attracting the rest of the foreigners to come and help the country.
I think, to be honest, that Somalia is in a complicated situation. It is in a far more complex area. It's strategically craved by every nation in the world. And so when everyone wants a nation, the best way for it to be is in turmoil. And so the status quo is being enkindled to ensure that Somalia remains a failed state. There's no honor in poverty. There's no honor in famine. The people don't want to be in famine. And so the only other possible reason for this is that it's other outside figures who want to keep it in this condition, who flamed the fires and ensured that Somalia remains in the situation. As we know, Somalia is bordered by the Red Sea, the Indian Ocean, the Gulf of Aden. You know, it is a gateway to the Arab world. It is an extreme taxation zone where the ships go through. So it's a really, 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 really strategic area. And even back in the day, the Ottomans used to use it, Somalia, as a safeguard for Mecca. So Mecca is in Saudi Arabia, it's the Holy Land. Imagine that a place that far away is being protected from Mogadishu and the port of Zeila, overseeing the Indian Ocean. So it is a strategic area, has all kinds of minerals. Among them is uranium, which is, you know, the building blocks for nuclear. We know that it is very fertile. Everything you plant just comes out. It doesn't need, you know, watering and fertilizers and stuff like that. And for a country that everything you throw on the ground is gonna grow, for it to be poor means that there's extra, you know, extraordinary circumstances. So I think because it is a complex nation in a complex area, that it is hard to help because there's so many hands involved. There's so many nations involved. There's bordering nations involved. Ethiopia is involved. Kenya is involved. Other outsiders are involved. So because Somalia is one of those countries that have one nation, one religion, one culture, one language, their unity is very easy to attain. And so when people are that unified, it's hard to stop them when they decide, hey, we're gonna do this, which is what happened in independence in 1960. And within 10 years, I think they were the superpower of Africa, right next to South Africa. So when you have people who are united like this, I think it becomes a common problem, and colonizers need to come back and start dividing you again, creating languages, you know, creating barriers. You've seen Somalia has a huge tribal problem. At the same time, people look alike. You can't tell one Somali from another Somali. They look exactly alike, you know. In fact, they look so alike, sometimes you even think that some Ethiopians may be Somalis. That entire region, all it, you know. So people want to create reasons to divide the nation, whether it's based on shade or hair texture or a simple name, you know. So I think because of that, since it's that complex, I think it's difficult to help it. But then I also think it can be simple. It takes one nation, like the United States, to say, you know, hey, enough is enough, and intercede.
You had a question, Manny? Because I had a follow-up.
No, just a follow-up, yeah. He just, like, answered all the questions that I had, because the question I had, it was like, okay, the way the famine is really pulled out, it didn't click to me that how fertile land, as you just mentioned, Somalia is. So the question might be, why then is there a dire need of food, like the extreme hunger, if we are able to plant all these and actually like produce as much as, which is a common question in Africa, because Africa is the most fertile land you can ever find on the earth, but yet we're the one who are most likely to experience famine. And just as you said, the complex interest in Somalia could be the only reason why there's even that famine, which should not be there. But also I saw that Somalia, as you mentioned, is the most homogeneous country in Africa, which kind of also links to Rwanda, the issue where the country is exactly the same. They always find a fine line of how to divide people, which is unnecessary. Like, you look at siblings and then you try to separate them when they are actually siblings. And that could be one of the issues that Somalia is facing currently.
Yeah, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say that she mentioned some very important things there. Somalia is one of the most homogeneous countries. They can trace their lineages exactly to like a few people. You know, it's very well documented. it's just like she was saying, it's a very fine line that they look for and to divide one another. And when you supply with one entity with arms and an initiative and monetary wealth, and you promise them gains, then in a place where there's a lot of famine, in a place there's a lot of hunger, everyone wants to save their family. And if you tell them, hey, you and your family are the superior tribe, here are weapons, here's some wealth, then, you know, go basically enslave this other tribe, then they're gonna, of course, go, you know, go on the offensive. And it's like the other stuff that she was saying about famine is true, since it is a very, like, Somalia has been documented to be 95% fertile. That means whatever you plant comes out. Somalia has four seasons, right? It's like just like the ones that you were saying. It's the gu, which is the spring, the haga, which is the summer, the deir, which is fall, and jilal, which is the winter. And so when the crops come out and it's ready to be, we have NGOs in Africa who only donate when the food and the crop are ripe and they're ready for sale and the locals want to put it on sale, then these disaster relief companies come and they offer food. And it's not the time to offer food because it's time for the locals to sell everything that they've been growing. And so they lessen the demand, the crops end up dying, the farmers end up demoralized. And so these NGOs are unchecked, and they take advantage of the fact that there's not a central government who has the capability, who has the power to drive them out. I really liked what Angola did, for example. They expelled everyone. They told everyone to get out, all NGOs, all NGAs, all United Nations and intergovernment organizations. They told everyone to get out. And for 40 days, I think they had like a some type of civil war. And whoever's the winner was the winner. And, you know, they became one united. Angola is one of the top nations, you know, in Africa. And they resolved their dispute. And now the NGOs, and they're all back, but now under a government. They can do whatever they want, as they want, or as they please. Now there's a set of rules, you know. And I think NGOs is one of the major problems that are causing famines. Bring food when the crop is already ripe and for sale. So I don't think that gets enough coverage.
Okay, so I have like a million thoughts, but I guess I'll start off from the last point that you just mentioned, which I think, again, the Western media always does a good job at what they do. They're good, because I did not think about the NGOs. I'll tell you that. I did not think about that. See, they had gotten to me. I was led to believe it was the rain. So now I am the wiser, and I think that makes way more sense to me now than the rain thing. That,
yeah.
Now go ahead.
I mean, the other thing is that, trust me, the only reason why I came up with these kind of thoughts is because of what you just said. Like, I didn't even know myself, because I had also kind of believed in the drought and everything. But like, also one thing that came into my mind is like, Somalia is right on the ocean. So even if there was drought, unless like, yes, with the failed system, like if this organization are even doing the right job, there could be more ways to supply water in order for the plant to still be grown. So this drought, this famine is preventable if the system in place and the false media is not there. You know, it's just crazy. But thank you for educating us. Like, seriously, I need to go to Somalia to see myself.
I did not even think about the ocean.
All right.
Good. You're normally the one like on the other side.
Wow,
it's crazy, because as you mentioned, you were saying that the U.S. donated $700 million,
right.
Mm-hmm. Or so, right?
Right.
But it takes, for example, $1.5 million to create a levee system, so that the waters in Hiran region, for example, do not overflow. Mm-hmm. And exactly. That could save, you know, that is a long-term plan. Why would you want to donate $700 million every year instead of doing a $1.5 million levy in the Hiran region, and so that you won't have to spend money on humanitarian, you know. So all the money that is spent on the nation is somehow returned to them in benefit. You know what I'm saying? So,
On the subject of money, I forget where this was found, but like I was watching this video about how they were saying, I forgot which country or which city they were talking about this, but they were like, to solve hunger in like one of these countries or like a couple of these different countries, I can't remember what the list was like, all you need is like, or like an entire country, like all you need is like $1.5 billion. So like if you add up the money, technically speaking, if we want to say, okay, yeah, let's just go with the logic, let's just go with the reason, quote unquote, that it was because of what we were saying. And so like if you go with that, technically speaking, you have the money, the capacity, and the manpower to solve the famine, quote unquote, natural cause famine. But it's not working. And so those are like some of the stuff to kind of consider. And then not only that, but like I know, so I was looking it up when Benny was talking about some of the when all of y'all were talking about the natural resources and stuff like that. So like some of the natural resources and like, and you know, correct me if I'm wrong if I say any of this, but like just doing a quick Google search, it was like uranium, iron ore, tin, gypsum, bauxite, copper, salt, and natural gas. We're talking about sources that people use
on a daily,
everyday basis, like no matter where you go. So like it's a little bit not putting my conspiracy theory hat on, but like a little bit sus when right. like you're having like this country 95% fertile land, all these natural resources that people use on a daily basis, salt, copper, tin, all of those things, those are can be exponential for like financial growth, for trading goods and services, and we're quote unquote struggling with food. Something's not added up. The math ain't mathing.
Yeah, and I don't know. I'm never really comfortable with the idea of, I guess, a Western superpower coming in and like donating like that, you know.
Can I ask a quick question to that?
Yeah.
Is there a reason? Like, I guess. So I grew up in the United States. So like, I don't have that outsider perspective. So like, what's the outsider perspective? And B, like, is there a reason? Is it like, does it feel like a sense of pity or something like that? Like, for lack of better terms.
I mean, and you guys could chime in if you want, but I wouldn't say pity per se. Well, you answered your question earlier, your own question right now. You answered it earlier about what can I get out of this? Right. I feel like that's literally always the thing, right? Like you can look at Canada right now, what they're doing, China, you know, it's always like they all do the similar thing, you know, where it's like they mask their help in something else. You know what I mean? Like, you know, everybody has a problem reading the fine print of everything, right? It's like the bigger picture is like, I feel like me and Benny are about to disagree on something. I know it's coming. But yeah, I feel like people have a hard time reading the fine print, you know, in the sense of like, I'll give you example. I'll give you $1,000 to fix this right now, right? But, you know, it's always that but, you know, in return, I don't want the $1,000. I want, you know, whatever resource you just fixed, I want to own it, right? So now it's like the price of that thing is going to be worth way more than $1,000, right? Like, I feel like that's kind of like the idea, you know, of why I personally don't feel like they should be going in there and helping, right? You have all these missionaries that come in. You have all these extra aid groups that come in, you know. Essentially for them, it's tax write-offs. They get money donated to them that they take for themselves, which again, why like we don't see a lot of things that get done, right? That's why, and I know this is going into a different country, just bear with me, but like Congo, right? Congo being one of the countries with the most missionaries in the world, which makes zero sense, but we know why they do, right? Because of the minerals that are coming out of there, right? So you have all these missionary groups in there not helping nobody, right? But somehow there's somebody outside of Congo that's profiting crazy, right? So for me, that's why it's always like unsettling. Like when I saw that $700 million, I'm like, bro, US just giving money to Africa like that, something is not adding up, right? Like there's something that's not making sense.
Yeah, I'm not even thinking on the disagreement on all whatever, right? What I'm just saying, like, before when I look into like ancient history, when the West came and tricked uneducated people, lost it, we reduced our currency values, we signed papers to give our land unknowingly. I understand that, but like at this time of point, like I don't blame if, like I give kudos to the U.S. stepping in and help, because it regardless of their intention, right? Regardless of the intention, we know they have intention. The issue is like, why are we accepting? That's the only thing I say. We know, like the people who are accepting the money, in the end, everyone is gonna look for benefit. If you're running, US is like a business. Like if you're running a company, a private company, you're always trying to find benefits, right? US as a country is gonna try to find a way to improve itself, regardless how they're coming in, lying on all that. Like the issue is that we keep putting these like blind eye on however we receive these donations and all that. Like they say, like some countries and some leaders have actually like been open up to accepting the fact that the aid is not that important to the country. Sometimes they turn them down, but when it comes to some political figures and most of the countries in Africa that are still just openly accepting this donation without like thinking about the ramification that comes with it, they should be the one taking the blame. Like, I'm not gonna come and be like, crucify US for doing what is gonna benefit the US. What I'm gonna come against is like the people who are accepting it, well knowing the impact that comes with it.
In political science, they call that dollar diplomacy. It's when they give you dollars to influence you as a nation, whether that's your vote at the United Nations, whether it's your stability, whether it's your ticket to become president again, whatever it is, it's with an intent. There's no free lunch anywhere in the world. Anytime they give you free lunch, they expect something in return. I'm sure you guys are all familiar with China's Belt and Road Initiative, wherein they help Africa with initiatives. For example, when I went to Kenya in 2021, I rode this nice train on Priority. I was sitting at the front, so it was pretty nice. It had the flag of Kenya on one side and the flag of China on the other side. And that really caught me off guard, because I was in Africa. I was in Kenya, but there was a Chinese flag. So that means that if Kenya is unable to pay back the money that it owes, then eventually Kenya will have to give up something, right? For example, Uganda defaulted on its debt to China because of COVID, because of the economic impact that resulted. China announced that they would be taking over the Entebbe International Airport. The only international airport of Uganda was being run by China, because now they said it was in the agreement, it was in the fine print, whether you read it or not, now that airport belongs to us. And so it is stuff like that, you know? Another thing that I like was Ghana's president, Nana Akufo-Addo. He believes in an Africa beyond aid. That's what he terms it. An Africa beyond aid. And he's saying, yeah, you know, we're struggling, we need some aid, but we want to create a nation that is not dependent on handouts. This is the statement he makes every time he's speaking. And one time he was doing a press conference, I remember, I think it was one of the Swedish government or something. And he was telling them, you know, we're going to start refining our own stuff. You know, we're not going to ship it off to you guys so that you guys can refine it and sell it for more. He's saying, we only get 20% of the profit and you guys get 80 just for refining. We're going to do it ourselves. And then the government, it was one European government that was there. I believe it was Sweden or Switzerland or one of these. And they said that, you know, we are happy doing business with you. We want to continue doing. And he said, basically, Ghana is a big nation. Find a business, invest in some other apparatus. I also like some of the things that Paul Kagame does in Rwanda, where he says, okay, you guys have given me aid. Don't tell me where to put this aid. I don't need it in education, for example. What I need now, he'll say, is, for example, security. You can tell me, you can come send observers where I put the money, where I spend it, but don't tell me where to spend it. If you guys are going to give Rwanda something, I'm going to decide where it's going to go, because I know where I'm being hurt the most. And I think at that time, he wanted to spend in education, and they wanted him to spend on nation building or something like that. And he said, because I know my country better, I know where my country is hurting, I'm going to put the money where it's needed. Otherwise, he said, keep your money. You know, don't give me money and then dictate the terms to me. He also said, one of the other things he said was that if you are going to hand or give some aid to Rwanda and you guys promise, you guys better hold up your end of the agreement, you know. So he's a pan-Africanist, both Kagame and the Ghanaian president. They have been, you know, one of my heroes, African heroes, per se. So I study them a lot.
So I have a question for you. As we know, most of the African leaders cannot be trusted. So the one question that comes into my mind is that if now the West is agreeing to that terms, it's like, don't tell me where to put what I give you. Most of Africans have more of like trust issues with the president, especially on how they use the money. So some of them, it could be like, yes, maybe President Paul Kagame knows which way to put it, but it doesn't say that, it does not guarantee that President Buhari knows where to put it. So the question will be, who and on what qualification do we grant that autonomy on how to use that money?
Well, I think that the money belongs to the United Nations, right? Or another government, whatever government giving out the handout, it belongs to them. But if the money is going to a good initiative and they can believe in the president, and the president can, we can have observers on the ground and seeing how he can improve the nation, then let the president make the call. And a lot of the times I believe that a lot of the governors or presidents that are actually, you know, really good presidents are depicted as evil and as monsters in other nations. For example, Somalia, Siad Barre, he did some evil things. He did quite a few evil things. However, he's gone, and where is Somalia now? Do you understand what I'm saying? We had Libya's Gaddafi. Now Libya has become a center where slave trade reigns supreme. The government is unstable. There is this other country I forget about now. They had a dictator who either, I think he was deposed and then he died or something like that. I can't remember the African country. But that country is also in turmoil. You know what I'm saying? So what is if the dictator or the president is good, it doesn't mean that democracy is going to work for everyone. It doesn't mean that I'm a proponent of dictatorship. It means that, okay, if you get rid of this dictator, what plans do you have to make a transition into a peaceful democracy? And what if democracy does not work out for them? What transitional plan do you have to bring them back to where they used to be? Because one of the issues with democracy is that there's a lot of bureaucracy. To get one thing done, there's so many protocols in place that maybe just building a levy will take 7 years or 8 years to approve. because of the amount of. So we don't want the nation to be stifled by bureaucracy, but at the same time, we don't want dictatorship. So how can we, you know, console the two?
I guess just a little bit off of that. I guess this question is kind of just directed to Abdul. I mean, you guys can answer if you want, but what can somebody, a regular person, what can they do to help Somalia, you know, in the current state that they're in right now?
So that's the other great question, isn't it? Because the only legal way to donate is to give to an NGO. And the NGO uses 80% of that to pay their staff, you know, or, you know, whatever. And then 15 or 20% of that money may or may not reach the country.
Right.
So it's very difficult. There's this one organization that I trusted. They're called the Humanitarian African Relief Organization, or HARO, who does some good work in Somalia and building wells and helping provide other humanitarian and medical help. But it's quite difficult. So every time I want to donate, I go on the ground. Or I give it to an aunt or to an uncle. And I say, you know, hey, you know, I can trust you guys. Why don't you guys give it? And they'll take pictures and videos and they'll bring it back to me, the stuff they donated or the meals that they handed out or the wells they built. So yeah, my father built a well.
Okay.
In one of the regions a well and an orphanage. So it was pretty nice. We were able to see pictures of it or live camera footage. And so it was kind of nice. But it's difficult to, especially for a place where the money cannot be traced or the NGO cannot be trusted. So it's pretty difficult all around.
Yeah, finance wise, I think it's good at sometimes just giving money is not enough, right? As we can see, we thought we knew a lot about Somalia, but apparently I was as dumb as Google. So I feel like the best way is actually take a trip. As he said, he went there, he's still alive. A lot of the time he's like, oh, if I go in Somalia, I'm not gonna come back alive. Yes, you will. And actually, I've seen some beaches in Somalia. So might as well take, you know, a weekend there, see what it is. Go there, have some food. Also, like, you can help people by actually, like, tourism is one of the growing industry in Africa. So once you start traveling to the country, you are propagating, like, the tourism in the country. You're sharing with friends. You're sharing the actual reality on the ground versus what people are going to find in on Google the way we did. I'm sure if it was just me, Luden, and Amy today just talking about Somalia, people would be terrified to go in that country. So you ease the mind. It's more now like, yeah, but I feel like confident, you know, like I'm traveling to Mogadishu. I'm going there, you know.
Yeah, Somalia is not the monstrous country. There's not people, you know, with large weaponry just going up and down the areas, you know. Actually, they're doing a lot to flush out the insurgency right now. This new president who was inaugurated, he's been in for less than a year, and he launched a war against Al-Shabaab, and he's really, really doing a good job flushing him out. Not that I agree with everything else that he's doing, but on that front, he's doing a really, really, you know, a great job. And I've seen a lot of tourists visit Somaliland. You know, it's a very, very semi-autonomous, peaceful state of Somalia. We have Puntland, which is also a peaceful state in Somalia. And we have Mogadishu, which, you know, from time and time, you know, when the insurgents try really, really hard, you know, smuggle some explosions into, because it is the capital and they want to make a statement. And so that place can sometimes be dramatic, but it's been getting less and less and less and less dramatic and less explosions. Before you used to see maybe an explosion every 3 days or three explosions in a single day. And now it's like maybe a month. a month and a half, 2 months. So they're doing something right. And people are visiting. I've seen a lot of people from around the world when I was in Mogadishu. And I've seen people from other African countries. I've seen Americans. I've seen Brits who are there. They're scared. They have guards and stuff like that, whatever, because you can actually get security forces to escort you if you have the money and stuff. But I've seen them. They're eating great foods and they're enjoying themselves at the beach. They're taking pictures. So it'll be nice to have you guys come over. Maybe we can do one next stop Africa in Mogadishu trip.
Yeah.
Yeah. Amy was like, I don't know about that.
No. That's honestly that is the end goal. I think to actually take, you know, next up Africa and make it mobile, you know, to actually, you know, go around and actually, you know, do that kind of thing. So that would be good. That would be actually fantastic. And
words of manifestation.
Yeah, and that was a good segue into the third question that Benny so much wanted to talk about.
So much.
I told you to trust me. We're gonna get there. Look, you see the segue.
Trust the process.
Exactly. You mentioned Somaliland. I guess you and Benny, you could open it up and then he could do his thing. Can you guys tell us a little bit more about Somaliland? So, Benny, if you could just have the floor. Not sure.
I thought I was gonna be the one most educated about this, but now you know what? I'm humbled. So, but yeah, Somalia versus Somaliland. So you can't talk about Somalia without talking about Somaliland, because if you look on the map of Africa, you don't see Somaliland. You see Somalia as one nation. However, as Emmy brought up before in the introduction, talking about the colonization of Somalia is that in the beginning, the British colonized the northern part of Somalia called the British Somaliland. And then the rest of the Somalia was colonized by different countries, but in the end, Italy took over, which made it the main Italian Somaliland. So the Somaliland continued to be mostly independent, but with some strict overlook by the British until the late 1900s, where they got a small, like 5-day independence from the British. And then after those 5 days, they joined the main Somaliland, the Italian Somaliland, and they became one nation of Somalia. So they continued, obviously, with one nation trying, but there were still more conflicts and all that until when Somalia gained its independence in 1960. But with that, they continued to working together, but also the language and also cultures were a little bit different because of the British influence on the north and then the Italian influence on the other side, and also like other political interests and people fighting. So in 1991, Somaliland gained its independence. So it came out of Somalia. They currently now have their own president. They have their own capital, capital city. They have their own Somaliland shillings. They basically have every single thing that a country owns, except the fact that they have yet to be recognized officially as their own country. Somaliland, because of its more stable political, they're more financial wise stable as compared to the main Somalia. But as much knowledge I know is that once you talk about Somalia, some people will say, oh, we're all Somalian, but other people will be like, no, I'm Somalis or I'm from Somaliland. They just try to, you know, separate themselves. But I can see it going towards like the way Sudan used to be like north versus south, and then south finally gained its independence. I feel like Somaliland is on the way to its like full recognition worldwide.
So Somaliland is like, it's like Taiwan. Yeah. It's Taiwan is a part of China that is seeking recognition. But the U.S. acts on what they call the One China policy, and they treat Taiwan as part of mainland China, politically speaking, at least. And Somaliland is also part of Somalia. And so the world recognizes it as a one Somalia policy. They approach it that Somalia is one country. And the reason that they want to separate, one of the reasons is that then President Siad Barre launched an assault against them. He bombarded them from the sky and from the ground. And he killed quite a few of them, you know, 50,000 or so, I think Amnesty International said. And he did that against his own people, which I believed was wrong. It was unacceptable to have an air raid against your own people. So they felt marginalized for good reason.
Right.
There's a lot of hurt and reconciliations need to be made. There's a lot of hurt and heartbreak. There's a lot of graveyards, you know. But Siad Barre, at that time, he was paranoid. Things were going out of control. My state itself, I'm from Punlan State. He poisoned their wells, killed their livestock, and arrested most of their prominent people. And he actually killed a lot of people from that region as well. But whereas Punlan said that this guy, he is a single person who made a single mistake. He did not speak for the rest of Somalia. Therefore, we are still part of Somalia. But Somaliland said that guy represented the entire Somalia, which he did represent entire Somalia because he was the president or the dictator, whatever you want to call him, at the time. And so they're saying that Somalia has marginalized us as a whole. And so because of this gap, I have to be sensitive when responding to this thing, because I am respectful of the unity of Somalia. And I think that it is an inviolable sovereignty. And I would never divide Somalia in any way. In fact, we have states that are missing that are currently colonized by Ethiopia, and another state that's colonized by Kenya. And we're trying to get these back and to create a greater Somalia, which has been a point of contention between neighbors and Somalia, which is why Somalia is currently in the condition that it's in today, was attempting to get those states back, especially from Ethiopia. And so this created contention. Somaliland announced independence and they became sovereign in their own eyes. So they're a self-proclaimed autonomous nation. But nobody recognizes them. The central government does not recognize them. The other states do not recognize them. And for a complete secession, it needs to happen through parliament, which would never, it doesn't look like would ever happen. But I believe that Somaliland is part of Somalia and there are brothers. There needs to be some healing, reconciliation. There needs to be blood money paid to Somaliland. For example, the whatever they said, the 50,000, I think they said 50,000. So they need to pay blood money for every single person who died. And the government needs to pay installments to the entire state. And then they can also divide the capital between Mogadishu and Hargeisa Somaliland. For example, they can put the parliamentary building in Somaliland and the presidential palace in Mogadishu to come to an amicable conclusion, since they do feel marginalized and they have a good reason to feel so. I think that it can be remedied. So I think that we can resolve our own stuff. We don't need other nations telling us what to do. And I think when I was in Somaliland, people in Somaliland wanted to be part of Somalia. So it's the ruling elite who feel that they need to be separate, but the people have always felt Somali. And it is a model for democracy in East Africa. However, it's been also going through its own turbulences in making sure that its democratic governance is inclusive.
Thank you, Benny and Abdul. That was well said. Spoken like a true future president.
Look, I was just gonna say that.
I think maneuvered the question so well,
so elegantly. So yeah, like
that was good. Wow. Yeah, I mean that's unless anybody else had another question, I think he ended it on like
beautifully,
the perfect way. I think again from us, I wanted to again thank you very much for joining us today. It meant a lot. We definitely, at least me, I know I learned a lot. You know that, you know, all the research could not have answered. So definitely appreciate you passing on the knowledge, which is definitely important, which is the key. I guess we've reached kind of like the, you know, the end of the episode. I guess just to kind of reiterate the things we talked about, you know, talked about famine, talked about the real reason why that it is happening. I mean, I clearly was not thinking straight today. I missed important details like the NGO and water. you know, I got to learn a little bit more about Somaliland and the relation to Somalia. Oh, we also talked about ways in which, you know, we could assist, which the main one was boots on the ground, in order to actually help, because that is a little bit tough to just give money to an organization, knowing that, you know, I think that's like across Africa itself, you know. I think I will not lie, I think this season, this was my favorite episode. I think I learned a lot. I think that's I like learning about Africa. And today, you know, I didn't feel like we were the subject experts, you know. Felt like we were in a class that I actually enjoyed.
Definitely.
Yeah, no, it was definitely good. Bro, you should definitely, you know, you should start doing speeches or something, bro. Yeah.
Yeah.
No. you can talk, bro. Like, yeah. You're ready yeah, for the world, for real. Yeah, for sure.
Appreciate it, man. Yeah. Yeah, we did, you know, we talked about a lot of really crucial, important stuff, not just for Africa, but it is very entangled with
right.
Pan-Africanism. And I think as our people continue to learn how to read and write, and the internet becomes more accessible, people become more educated. Mm-hmm. They see through the deception and they're right. learning how to articulate this. But when they become eloquent in their speech and articulate in their words, I think mm-hmm. that they can finally begin to see through the deception of the world. Mm-hmm. And the only way that that you would be able to keep a population who is educated under control is to station a guard at every neighborhood or every home, you know?
Mm.
And so Somalia has been doing pretty, pretty phenomenal without a strong central government. They have the fastest internet in Africa. They have extremely, extremely profound communication systems. They've been using phones to purchase stuff before the Apple Pay thing became famous. Mm. They were using money transfer systems on their phone. And so I feel that as time progresses and time continues, Africa will be the continent that will run the world in the future.
Amen.
As we will learn and we'll grow together and we'll learn from one another. And we're going to be unstoppable. No one's going to be able to stop us, you know? And I think that's where the world is headed right now, because Somalia today is not what it was 10 years ago. There's new roads, there's new initiatives. Somalis in the West are becoming finally more involved in Somali politics. They have something to say too. Whereas before it was only tribal leaders, elders and stuff like that. Now everyone is involved. It's my nation, it's my future. I have something to say. And I think that's what a lot of our diaspora are doing today. And it's been such a pleasure to meet up with people from whose descendants are across the world in other parts of Africa and the Dominican and stuff like that. So as a whole, please accept the assurances of my highest considerations and esteem, and I look forward to your continued successes.
Ooh, Jesus.
I don't think you guys hear this, man.
No, right?
What?
Okay, I'm here for you. Anna, we're here for it, okay? No, you,
and he's hot. She's like, I gotta.
She's like, I'm ready. No, because y'all know it. Y'all know. Hey, last time when I spoke and I asked the question, like, how many, what is his name?
Yes.
Julius Nyerere, how many Nelson Mandela is there? We
spoke this into existence, bro. We had this conversation of how many actual, you know, real leaders are left in the world that can actually help Africa or help their nation to get to a point, you know, where, and wow. And here we are.
Thank you so much, Abdus. Yes, yeah. We keep inspiring Africa, keep encouraging Pan-Africanism. That's the road that we're all preaching to walk. And I don't even know what to say. I will just pray for you. That's all.
No, we'll continue to stick together. We'll remain in contact.
For sure.
And when the campaigns start kicking off, I'll contact you guys again, huh?
Damn, you're always welcome. Next Talk Africa is open.
Salute and you know, I guess let them know to follow us on
since our guy doesn't know our social handles, please feel free to check out all our social media handles and our website. Our Instagram is official_nextstopafrica, Twitter_nextstopafrica, and our website nextstopafrica.net. So feel free to check us out. Check out the website. Episodes are always posted on our website, on Spotify, Apple Music, all the shebang. We're also on Alexa, all that kind of stuff. Feel free to check us out. And as always, remember, 5 stars, nothing less. If you give us anything less than that, we don't want it.
We do not want
it. You guys are 5 stars on my book.
Yeah, but you know, we reached the, you know, my favorite part of each episode, song of the day. Typically what we do is each guest, we ask them to give us their current favorite song or their favorite song of all time. I try to ask for you to give me something from your country, but people seem to always give me a Nigerian song. We've been on the Nigerian streak for a very long time. So
I have one.
Okay, please tell me something from Somalia, please.
It's called you can put I love you more than my life, Somali song.
Hey, nagupenda mimi sana.
That's my favorite Somali song right now.
I do not even need to introduce that. That was the hit at the height of TikTok. At the height of TikTok.
Oh yeah.
Somalia was running TikTok for the longest. Yes.
That was a good song.
It was. I love you long time, never my happy is the song of the day.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think this was an amazing episode. It was fun. You know, I think like always, like we said, make sure you tune in for the next episode. We're going to do South Sudan. Also, I know you guys didn't hear Malik today, but he was at a
fundraiser.
But yes, he'll be here for the Sudan episode. But yeah, like always, until next time, peace.